Seeing the question in his eyes, she smiled. "I want this. I want you," she whispered. She turned her head toward the stairs and sighed. "Emily, we have to be quiet and careful in case she wakes up." "We can stop," he said immediately. "I don't want you to feel awkward, and I certainly don't want Emily to be upset."
She settled her gaze back on his face, and her heart melted that he cared so much about her and her daughter that he would halt what they had begun.
"If we're quiet, I can hear her, although she sleeps so soundly every night."
His lips curved into a smile that matched her own, and his fingers gently slid the cups of her bra down, exposing her rosy-tipped nipples. He shifted her again, this time allowing him to kiss his way down to her breasts, his mouth latching onto one aching nipple. He sucked deeply, tugging and pulling, causing her to groan once again. She clung to his hair, holding him to her breast as he slid his fingers down to the front of her pants, slipping them underneath the waistband. Dragging them through her wet folds, she had to stifle her cry of pleasure, not wanting to wake Emily. Aiden plunged his fingers inside Leah's sex while continuing to suck her breasts, moving from one nipple to the other. He concentrated on the amazing way her body was responding to his touch, and, like tinder to a flame, she quickly blazed hot for him. Pushing her hips up toward his hand, she urged him to continue. His fingers scissored inside as his thumb pressed gentle circles on her clit.
"Yes, please," she begged. "Come on, baby," he encouraged,
feeling her inner core tightening on his fingers. She jolted, rearing back as her orgasm rushed through her, sparks flying outward from her core in all directions.
"That's it," he said, mumbling against her breasts.
Sliding his head backward, he peered into her face, loving her closed-eyed expression of bliss.
"Ride it out, baby," he encouraged.
Leah continued to thrust her pelvis against Aiden's fingers until the last of the tremors subsided and she settled her body heavily on top of his. After a moment of her entire body feeling blissfully weightless, her eyes fluttered open and met his, staring straight into hers. Grinning widely, he slipped his fingers from her wetness and brought them up to his mouth, sucking deeply. She had thought in the early days of her marriage that she and Carl had had a healthy sex life, but she had never witnessed a man take such pleasure in simply giving her pleasure. The sight of Aiden sucking her juices off his fingers had her mesmerized. He had just given her the best orgasm she had had in her life, and had not even gotten off himself. The idea of what he could do when they actually had sex had her anticipation heightening, wondering if it would be possible to die of an orgasmic overload. Aiden watched the play of emotions cross Leah's face before settling into a smile. His heart warmed as he leaned up, kissing her gently while allowing her to taste her essence on his tongue. After several minutes, he pulled back, lifting his hand to tuck wayward strands of hair behind her ear.
"You okay?"
Her smile widened, and she said, "Oh yeah, I'm not sure I've ever been so okay." Kissing her lightly once more, he shifted them upward, gently pulling her bra and shirt back into place. Seeing the surprised expression on her face as her eyes dropped to his crotch, widening at the sight, he laughed.
"This needed to be all about you."
"But what about you? You didn't, get off."
"That'll come, sweetheart, when you're ready. When we're both ready. But I want the time to be right for everything we do. And tonight, I just wanted you to feel pleasure. And believe me, it was great for me, too."
He watched as she bit her lip, her brows lowered in thought.
"Tell me what you're thinking, Leah. I never want to just assume and then make the wrong assumption."
He had her settled in his lap, his arms banded about her, holding her close.
"I never meant for this to be all about me," she said, her hand cupping his jaw.
She rubbed her thumb along his rough stubble and held his gaze. Though she blushed, she pressed on with what she wanted to say.
"It's been a really long time for me. I haven't been with anyone since Carl, and, quite frankly, he was overseas a lot of our marriage. So much of my focus over the last few years has been on Emily. I was beginning to wonder if I had become unsexual, if that's even a word."
He chuckled, staring into her beautiful face.
Babe, you came alive at just a touch of my fingers. You flamed brighter than anything I've ever seen just from our kisses. Believe me, there's nothing unsexual about you.
Her lips curved slightly.
For a while, Aiden, I was scared. Scared of feeling things for you that would not be reciprocated. Scared of feeling things that I thought you might be incapable of feeling for me. Scared of taking a chance on something, and now that I'm a mom, knowing that I can't just think about myself.
And now? Are you still scared?
She stared into his blue eyes, seeing concern but not fear. She shook her head slowly, and her lips curved into a gentle smile.
I learned after Emily was born that we cannot always plan our lives perfectly, and learned after Carl's leaving, and then his death, that I don't want to just sit on the sidelines. I'm ready to take a chance again, and I want to take that chance with you.
Her words snaked through him, warming him from the deepest part of his soul. He moved in, his lips touching hers, this time not in lust, but as a promise.
I want you, Leah, he said. I want both you and Emily, and I'll do everything in my power, if you place your trust in me, to be the kind of man you both deserve.
She pulled him in close, holding his cheek upon her chest, as their arms wrapped tightly around each other. After a moment, he said,
I can feel your heart beat against my face.
She did not hesitate to confess.
When I was unsure that Emily was able to hear me tell her that I loved her, I would place her so that her cheek was right next to my heartbeat. I always wanted her to feel it, even if she couldn't hear it. She still does that, even now, and I always tell her she can hear my heart. It's the sound of my love.
He remained silent, unsure if she spoke of love for just her daughter, or if, perhaps, it might be for him, too. But he quickly determined that, at that moment, it did not matter. Just the sound of her heartbeat against his cheek was all he needed.
Chapter 18.
Leah's phone vibrated on the nightstand, jerking her awake. Rolling over quickly, she grabbed it. The screen showed it was just after 2 a.m.
Hello?
No answer.
Damn it, who is this?
The call disconnected just before she was going to hang up, frustrating her even more. Replacing the phone back on her nightstand, she flopped on her back in bed, staring at the ceiling.
Who on earth can this be? Prank callers, teenagers? Someone who's just trying to piss me off?
Throwing back the covers, she climbed out of bed and padded into the bathroom. Filling up a glass, she took a long drink of water. Sighing heavily, she lifted her eyes to the mirror, her gaze drifting over the slight razor burn down her neck and visible to the V in her silk pajama top. A grin slid over her face as she thought of Aiden's stubble making the slight abrasions. Putting the irritating phone call out of her mind, she flipped off the bathroom light and crawled back into bed. With thoughts of Aiden and the next step she hoped they would take in their relationship, she grinned as she fell back to sleep.
How's the investigation going?
Scott asked, standing in Leah's office doorway. She rolled her eyes, but smiled her greeting as she waved him in. He had shed his suit coat, but she liked the way he had always maintained his professional appearance, with a white button-up shirt paired with navy slacks and a light blue tie. His hair was neatly trimmed and brushed to the side. It was easy to imagine him being the elder, dapper Mr. Redding's grandson.
To answer your question, the investigation is simply going, she laughed. While I was with a firm in Virginia Beach, I was used to going into larger companies to do an internal investigation into possible fraud. But here in Baytown, it's so different. Everyone knows everyone else. No one really likes to see a forensic accountant coming, because they know that we're looking to see if someone stole money, and if so, who did it. I'm just used to doing that with a certain amount of anonymity.
He chuckled and nodded.
I remember my grandfather used to complain that while he was completely professional in keeping everyone's taxes and business accountings confidential, people would come up to him in the middle of a restaurant and start asking questions.
That's what will be very strange here, she said. Whatever I find out with the fraud investigation, it will be someone that everyone in town knows. And even though it isn't my fault, often it is the bearer of bad news that takes the blame.
Scott appeared to be lost in thought for a moment before looking up and holding her gaze steadily.
And have you found anything definitive yet? Not definitively, but I do feel like I'm heading in the right direction.
You know, no matter what, the mayor will want things kept as quiet as possible.
Shrugging, she said, It's not my say what happens. I simply turn over my findings to the district attorney whenever I'm ready. How the town council and mayor want to handle that is on them.
Standing, he nodded and walked toward the door.
Good luck with everything, partner, he called out.
She stared at the doorway for a moment after he left, not sure what to make of that last comment, before her phone vibrating caused her gaze to jerk back to her desk. She had 3 calls already where no one answered. Gritting her teeth, she grabbed it up and said, just stop calling.
Babe?
Oh, sorry, she babbled.
What the fuck is going on? What's wrong?
Aiden demanded, his voice laced with concern. She rubbed her forehead and sighed.
I'm just getting stupid prank hang-up phone calls that have gotten on my last nerve. I had one in the middle of the night that woke me up, and 2 so far today. I didn't even look to see who was calling when I bit your head off.
How long has this been going on?
For the last week, but I just...
He shouted, for the past week? You've been getting hang-up phone calls for a week and haven't said anything to me?
Each word grew louder until she had to hold the phone slightly away from her ear.
It's just prank calls, Aiden.
How do you know that?
What else could it be? It's not like anybody's making any demands or asking anything of me. Nobody's threatening me. Nobody's breathing deeply into the phone. They're just irritating the hell out of me.
By now, her voice had risen as well, and she sucked in a deep breath before letting it out slowly in an attempt to stay calm.
Babe, I'm coming over, he stated emphatically.
Aiden, there's no sense in I'm coming.
He disconnected, and she stared at her phone for a minute, shaking her head. Part of her wanted to be irritated at his high-handedness, but the other part felt it was nice to have someone who cared. Looking back down at her files, she figured she would get a little bit more work done before he came. 15 minutes later, Mrs. Markham appeared at her door.
Miss Smith, you have a visitor. It's Police Chief Evans.
Mitch?
Mrs. Markham turned to the side, allowing Mitch to step into her office.
Shall I bring coffee?
Mitch turned and shook his head toward her efficient secretary and said,
No, thank you, not on my account.
She stood and offered him a chair, but before she was able to ask why he was there, Aiden came bursting in. Mrs. Markham was behind him, fluttering her hands, but she just nodded that it was all right.
Good, Mitch, I'm glad you got here, Aiden said,
before walking over to her, placing his hand on her waist lightly and bending to kiss her cheek. Staring up at him, eyes wide, she asked,
Aiden, what on earth have you done?
Taking care of you, sweetheart, he said,
his voice softer now that his arm was around her. She blinked, then her eyes darted to Mitch.
I don't know that anything's going on other than I'm getting prank calls. I'm sorry, Mitch. I don't think this needs to involve the police.
I'd rather be safe than sorry, Leah, Mitch replied. Tell me about the calls.
She huffed slightly, then winced, knowing he was only doing his job.
They started over a week ago. No number comes up on my caller ID, it just says unknown. There's no heavy breathing, she said with a slight grin, so I don't think it's a pervert. I can tell the line is open, but no one says anything. The first couple of times it happened, I assumed that someone perhaps had the wrong number. But it's been happening every day, and now has increased to several times a day, including waking me up in the middle of the night.
Have you ever had anything like this happen before?
She shook her head, replying, No, never.
I know you do forensic accounting investigations and used to work for a large firm in Virginia Beach. Did you ever have any problems with anyone with that?
Her forehead crinkled for just a moment before her eyes shot up toward Aiden and she said, His brows snapped down and he barked,
What the fuck do you mean by,
She looked back toward Mitch and said, I have had to testify in the trials of some of the people I investigated. White collar crime, not like murderers. But I did have one who was very threatening as he was led from the courtroom in handcuffs. He kept claiming that he did nothing wrong and he was going to get me. The evidence was overwhelming and, unfortunately, with many white-collar criminals, they make many excuses. In his case, he felt entitled. He even admitted that lots of rich people are crooks, so why shouldn't he be able to get a piece of the pie? Mitch pulled out a small pad and began taking notes.
Is this man still in jail?
Jerking slightly, she said, I have no idea. Quite frankly, after the trial, I forgot all about him until just now.
Give me his information and I'll check on him.
Tad Marvel.
Seeing Aiden's eyes widen in surprise, she offered a slight shrug.
It takes months or even over a year to investigate forensic crimes. Believe me, by the time we have enough evidence for a district attorney to take the case and for it to go to trial, I remember their name very well.
Is there anything unusual that's happened since you've been here in Baytown? Mitch asked.
Shaking her head, she said, No, I've just been doing regular accounting work and now have a forensic case I'm working on for the town, but that's all.
Scott stepped to the doorway, his eyes staring down at a file, and startled as his gaze lifted to see the police chief.
Oh, excuse me, I didn't realize you had someone in here.
No, that's okay, she said. Scott, I know you've met my,
boyfriend,
Aiden supplied, his gaze pinned on Scott.
Yes, nice to see you again.
Shooting Aiden a glare, she continued, And this is Baytown's police chief, Mitch Evans. Mitch, this is my new accounting partner, Scott Redding.
Mitch stood and extended his hand.
Redding?
Scott grinned and nodded.
Yes, my grandfather, Thomas Redding, was the original owner of this business. I'm glad that Lee is the one who hired me, or everyone would think nepotism was alive and well in Baytown.
Mitch barked out a laugh and said,
Don't worry about accusations of nepotism. My father was the police chief for many years until his health forced him to retire, and before him, my grandfather was the police chief.
Everyone chuckled, and she was glad for the release of tension. Feeling the need to explain why Mitch was there, she said,
Scott, I'm talking to Mitch because I've been getting lots of prank, hang-up phone calls. I don't think it's anything other than just probably kids or teenagers, but he's taking notes anyway.
Scott expressed concern before excusing himself from the room, saying,
Well, I've got a few questions on this one account, but we can easily talk later.
Mitch turned his attention back to her and said,
I'd like to take your phone with me if you can do without it for a couple of hours. We can see what we pull up on it and, with your phone records, do a little digging.
Aiden walked over and placed his hand around her shoulders, pulling her in tightly. Lifting his eyes to Mitch, he asked,
Is there anything else she should be doing?
Shaking his head, Mitch said,
Unfortunately, no. While it's annoying, no crime has been committed at this time, but we want to be vigilant in case whoever this person is steps up and actually makes a threat. I would just be extremely aware of your surroundings and what's going on.
Unease snaked through her at the thought that the phone calls could be more than just kids. Nodding, she offered a shaky smile toward Mitch as she stood and shook his hand. Handing him her phone, she asked,
Do you know how long you might need it?
It shouldn't be too long. I'll get it back to you by tomorrow. Will that be okay?
She agreed and watched as Aiden walked Mitch out of her office, wondering what they were talking about. As soon as Aiden returned, she opened her mouth, but he jumped in first.
Don't even start, babe, he said. I know you think it's nothing, but I'm not willing to take a chance on your or Emily's safety.
At those words, her mouth snapped closed. She had not considered that there might be a threat toward her, and certainly not toward her daughter. She nodded slowly, staring up into his face, which mirrored hers in concern. He stalked toward her and pulled her into his body, kissing her forehead.
I've got you. I've got Emily. And believe me, nothing's going to get to either one of you.
The unease that had moved through her body was now replaced with the warmth of caring. Having handled her life on her own for so long, she was surprised not to chafe at the idea of someone else stepping in to help. It did not make her feel weak, but instead made her feel stronger. Wrapping her arms around his waist, she held on tight. She felt his heartbeat against her cheek, taking comfort in the sound.
Chapter 19.
Aiden met Mitch outside of Harrison Investigations. Pushing open the door, they walked in together and immediately observed Caitlin coming from one of the back rooms.
Hey, guys, she greeted.
She stared for a few seconds and then tilted her head slightly to the side, asking,
What brings y'all by?
Need some help, sis, he said. Help for Leah.
Gareth walked to the lobby from the back and greeted them as well. Before he could say anything, Caitlin turned to her husband and said,
Something's going on with Leah.
Immediately, Gareth's sharp gaze jumped first to him and then to Mitch.
Come on back, he said,
turning and leading them to the conference room. He had been in business as a private investigator for a couple of years, hiring Caitlin to be his receptionist. As she became more interested in the business, she earned her PI license as well. Once they were married, they became partners. The four of them settled quickly around the table, and Mitch pulled out Leah's phone.
She's been getting a lot of phone calls where no one says anything. She says that she can tell the line is open, but does not hear anyone breathing, nor is anyone making a threat. But it's happening more and more, and it's beginning to unnerve her.
Gareth asked, "Something to do with her business?"
"That's what I wondered as well," Mitch replied. "She's given us the name of a man she previously testified against when she lived in Virginia Beach, and I've got Grant checking to see what the status of his incarceration is."
Gareth reached for her phone and asked,
"This is for me to look at?"
"Yeah, I was going to have Bert look at it since he's my best tech officer, but he's not on duty today, and I don't want to wait. I also know you've got some fancier toys."
A smile slipped across Gareth's face, and he said,
"I'll get right on it. As soon as I have anything, I'll let you know."
Mitch stood and clapped Aiden on the back of the shoulder.
"Don't worry, man. I'll let the rest of my officers know, and we'll keep an eye on Leah."
He nodded, then jerked his head up.
"We need to let Colt know as well, because she doesn't live in the town of Baytown. She lives just outside the city limits, in North Heron County."
"You got it," Mitch said. "I'll head back right now and call Colt."
Gareth walked Mitch out, leaving Caitlin and him still in the conference room. She did not say anything at first, staring at him for a long time. Finally, moving into him, she wrapped her arms around him and hugged him tightly.
"I can tell you're upset. I know how much she and Emily mean to you."
"It's crazy, sis," he said,
holding her tightly as well.
"The instant she told me about the calls, I felt cold running through my blood. And then the next thing I knew, I felt boiling rage that anyone might mess with her."
Caitlin lifted her head, her dark hair falling way down her back as she peered up into his eyes, so like hers.
"That's when you know it's love, Aiden."
He was silent for a moment, and she ventured another question.
"Does that scare you?"
He shook his head slowly and said,
"I know you might not believe this, but no, it doesn't."
With a final hug, he let her go and walked out of the office, deciding to swing by the police station to see what they were finding out about Tad Marvel. When he reached the station, Ginny greeted him and motioned for him to follow her. They went back to Mitch's office and sat, waiting for him to get off the phone.
"What have you got?"
he asked, as soon as Mitch hung up.
"Found out Tad Marvel has served his time and was released last month. I just got off the phone with his probation officer, who says he makes all of his meetings, is employed in a trade, and hasn't given him any reason to think that he would be involved. I let him know what was going on with Leah, and he said he would be on the lookout."
Ginny commented, "I don't know, it doesn't sound right to me." His eyes jerked toward her, and she continued, "Hang up phone calls don't sound like a man's type of revenge."
"We don't know what kind of man he is," he said. "Maybe he's just the kind of man that likes to dig around with a woman."
Mitch nodded. "Let's see what Gareth comes up with looking at her phone. The probation officer has my information, and promised he would call us as he checks into Tad, but I don't want us to focus just on this man. She's had other people that she's investigated before, and that's not even including what she's doing right now."
"This sucks," he said, slumping down into a chair. "All I want to do is keep her safe, but I don't even know which direction a threat might be coming from."
Ginny and Mitch shared a glance before she said, "Yeah, welcome to love, buddy."
"Jesus, that's what Caitlin said."
Mitch cautioned, "Keep in mind, it might not be anything. It could be just what she assumed, somebody playing a prank. But stay vigilant, and I'll let you know as soon as we find out anything."
With a nod, he stood and headed back outside. Pulling out his phone, he called the accounting office. When Mrs. Markham connected him to Leah, he requested,
"Hey, sweetheart, until we know what's going on, I'd like to be with you and Emily. I've got an American Legion meeting tonight, but I'll be over just as soon as it's finished."
"Actually, Emily is spending the night with a friend. I'm really excited for her, but kind of nervous."
"Leah, I think that's great," he enthused. "That means she's meeting new friends, which I know you wanted her to do, and it's really good for her."
"I think so, too," she agreed. "How about I come to the pub after work to meet you when you get there after the meeting?"
"Babe, I can't think of anything I'd like better."
Aiden watched as Grant, the commander of the American Legion chapter, rapped the gavel on the podium, calling the meeting to order. Ginny closed the doors, and she and Brogan walked toward the front, the flagpole in his hand. Once the chaplain had offered the prayer, Grant called for the POW-MIA empty chair ceremony. After having talked with Charles, his mind cast back to the young man that he had sat with as he died. Even though that young Marine was not a prisoner of war, nor missing in action, the ceremony still struck him in a different way than it ever had before. He found himself whispering, "I promised to live life to the fullest." And for the first time, that meant something different than it ever had before. After several committees gave their reports, Grant turned the podium over to any of the members who wished to speak. Often, one of the older members would speak about their time in the service. It was a tradition that Mitch had started when he was the commander, to give the members a chance to get to know each other, and often unburden themselves. He was a strong believer that the American Legion was more than just waving a flag, that the meetings should be a time that the members could lean on each other. No one moved to stand, and, much to his surprise, he found himself on his feet. Ignoring the incredulous looks from Brogan and his friends, he moved to the front and turned to face the gathering.
"I recently discovered something about myself. I'd never really connected it to anything from my time in the service, but with the help of one of the counselors at the mental health group, I've been able to put some pieces together. I have listened in awe, as many of you have talked about your traumatic experiences in the military. But for me, I looked at myself as incredibly lucky. I was not involved in anything that was devastating. I did not lose any close friends, and I came back home to my family. But since then, I've been living for several years, always looking to have fun. I won't go into all the details, but I did have an experience where I sat with a young Marine that I did not know as he was being treated by the medics. We had come across an accident involving his transport vehicle, and he was severely injured. So I sat near his head, and we talked about life. Girls we'd like to be with, music we like to listen to, things we wanted to do when we got home. It wasn't until the sound of the medevac helicopter about to land that I discovered that he was near death, and there was nothing that the medics could do but try to ease his pain. He must have known the end was near, because he asked me to promise that when I got home I would live life to the fullest, and do all the things we just talked about. It never dawned on me how my actions when I got home a year later were intrinsically tied to what I had promised. I tried to be a good man, a good son, a good brother, but I was truly living mostly for me, having fun wherever I could. But I now know that I was living an empty life, always chasing something that I thought would make me happy, but in truth, did not. I've now met someone that I care a great deal about, and I finally figured out that living life to the fullest isn't about chasing momentary happiness. It's about finding someone that you can connect with, and wanting to be the best person you can be for them.
Not sure how to end his speech, he blushed and ducked his head.
I guess that's all.
Grant pulled him into a hug, with a back slap, before allowing him to head back to his seat. Along the way, most of his friends did the same. Finally, as he moved into the row of chairs occupied by Pops, his dad, and Brogan. Taking them in, he stopped, seeing tears in each of their eyes. Shaking his head, he gave them one of his typical grins, but accepted their hugs as well. Glad that the meeting was soon to be over, he could not wait to get to the pub, knowing Leah was going to be there for him. Leah threw open the red door to Finn's pub and walked through, quickly seeing the Friday night crowd. She waved toward some of her friends and made her way to their table. She had heard that many of the Legionnaires came to Finn's after a meeting, just like many of the auxiliary members did after their meetings. It was exciting to know so many people in town already. Caitlin brought over some appetizers, while Corinne held little Finn. Nancy and Claire Evans were sitting at the tables also, Nancy with Eddie on her lap. Belle, Jade, Madeline, Jillian, and Tori rounded out the group. Caitlin slid next to her and said, "Mitch and Aiden came to talk to Gareth. I'm so sorry you're getting those calls." "I still think it's a prank," she said. "It's annoying, but I'm not afraid." "Well, just so you know, Gareth is working on your phone. I haven't done that kind of work before, so he's teaching me as we go. We'll have your phone back to you tomorrow." "No problem. Since Emily is at a sleepover tonight, Aiden gave me his in case of an emergency or something." Smiling her thanks, she turned her attention to the others as they caught up on each other's lives. Glancing over to the side, she observed Celia and Sandra at the bar, their heads bent together as they chatted. It was something that normally she would never think about, since both women worked in the municipal building together. But after having been there interviewing them, she could not help but take note. Her attention soon went back to the conversations at her table. Corinne handed little Finn to Caitlin and moved to her side. Leaning over, she whispered, "I hope I don't sound like an overeager mother, but I just want to say that I'm so pleased that you and Aiden are seeing each other." She smiled widely, her heart warm at the acceptance.
That's really nice of you to say. We're still so new, but, well, that means a lot to me.
Corinne's smile slipped as she stared over her shoulder.
I think you're wanted.
Swinging her head around, she noticed that Sandra was standing nearby, her eyes imploring. Excusing herself, she slid from the booth and walked over to her. She glanced toward the bar and noticed that Celia was no longer sitting there. Sandra, her eyes nervously darting around, whispered,
I don't know what's happening, but I feel like I should warn you. Please, just be careful.
Eyes narrowing, she tilted her head slightly to the side, trying to discern her meaning.
I'm sorry?
Sucking in her lips, Sandra stepped back slightly.
Honestly, I don't know anything for sure. I just...
Did Celia say something? Is this coming from her? Shaking her head, Sandra said,
No, not really, nothing definitive. There was just an inference.
Inference? Sandra shook her head again, her eyes darting to the side once more.
I just get the feeling that there are some who would rather you not find out anything.
Before she had a chance to respond, Sandra turned and quickly pushed her way through the crowd and out the door. She stood for a moment, lost in thought, wondering what Sandra meant and what Celia may have said to her. Sighing, she knew it was not the first time that she was upsetting people with an investigation.
No one likes having their work checked, even if they are innocent of any wrongdoing, but especially not if they are committing fraud.
Turning back toward her friends, she heard the sound of a group entering the pub. Twisting around, she grinned at the sight of Aiden leading the pack. He walked straight to her without hesitation and wrapped his arms around her tightly, publicly claiming her for anyone to see. She slid her arms around his waist and held on tight, the two of them letting the rest of the noise in the crowd fade away. At that moment, with her daughter happily playing at a friend's house and the man she was falling for in her arms, she could not remember ever being happier. He smiled as he looked down, her eyes shining and her smile wide. He ran his nose along hers and whispered in her ear,
What's got that sweet look on your face?
Let's get out of here, she said,
her voice raspy with need. His smile matched hers, and his blue eyes twinkled.
Oh, baby, I'll take you anywhere you want to go.
With a wave toward their friends, they walked out of the pub together. Chapter 20 Aiden escorted Leah to her front door, his fingers shaking slightly where they splayed on her lower back. He wondered if it was just him, but as she placed the key into the door, her hands were shaking as well. They entered her house and he was struck with uncertainty, an emotion he rarely felt. A flash of his previous habits flew through his mind. Entering a woman's hotel room always meant wondering what preliminaries he needed to go through to get her into bed, because the act of fucking was the only reason he was with them. Some fun, some laughs, but essentially just to get off. And then he was out of there, having no desire to learn more about them or small talk, and sure as hell not to stay for breakfast the next day. But as he and Leah entered her living room, and she dropped her purse to the table by the sofa and turned toward him, her own nervousness sent a fierce wave of protectiveness through him. He wanted to comfort her, care for her, hold her, but suddenly full of self-doubt, his hands stayed rooted to his sides. Her warm, wide eyes stared up at him, and she said,
I feel like I have no idea what to do next. Isn't that crazy? I was married, yet everything before you seems to have just disappeared, and I'm just standing here wanting you to want me, and not having a clue what I should do.
Her honesty slammed into him, and all the faceless women before her, their coy smiles, flirtatious manners, winks, and seductive talk, flew from his mind. It was as though they had never been, and all that was left for him was the beautiful woman staring nervously up at him, opening her heart. In two steps, he was directly in front of her, his hands placed lightly on her neck with his thumbs up toward her chin.
Your beauty fills my eyes, but it's who you are inside that fills my soul. I've never wanted anything more than this moment right here with you. Tonight, we only do what you want to do, how you want to do it, when you want to do it. Just the fact that you're here with me is enough.
Her lips curved into a soft smile, and her hands slid around his waist.
I feel like I've been waiting for this moment for a really long time, she confessed.
Lifting on her toes, she met his lips halfway. Skimming her lips over his, she pressed her body tightly to him, opening her mouth to allow him to plunder her soft depths. The kiss, which started slow, quickly flamed white hot. With his thumbs still on her chin, he angled her head slightly so that he could explore with easier access. His tongue slid between her lips, the touch light to begin with, before becoming more demanding. She answered with a groan that he felt down to his cock as their tongues tangled. He slid one arm over her shoulder down her back, banding her tightly to him. His erection strained painfully as it pressed against her stomach, but he did not want to move too quickly, preferring to savor the taste and feel of her lips instead. Lowering her heels to the floor, she separated from their kiss, and he stared at her reddened lips for a second before moving up and getting lost in her melted chocolate eyes. He felt her pull away, and the cool between their bodies replaced the heat that had just been there. Immediately, she slid her hand to his, linking their fingers. Stepping away, she pulled him along, and they walked up the stairs toward the bedroom. No pretense, no artifice, just her letting him know exactly what she wanted. At the top of the stairs, right outside her door, he halted, their hands jerking slightly between them. She turned and looked up at him, a silent question in her eyes. He tugged her back toward him and, with his free hand, smoothed the wrinkle in her brow.
"We don't have to do anything you don't want to do," he said. "I want this to be all about you."
He watched the smile slide across her face, and she replied,
"I just want you, all of you."
She sucked in her lips for a moment before lifting her eyes again.
"I don't know what this will mean to you, but you should know before we go further, it means everything to me."
Again, her honesty filled him.
"The gift you're about to give me is the greatest gift I've ever received. I promise to treat it with care and to cherish it."
With a wordless smile, she turned and led him into the bedroom. He cast his eyes about the room, seeing an antique white, queen-sized bed covered in a light blue bedspread, a matching dresser, and a floral-patterned comfy chair angled near the blue-curtained window. Furniture never held any fascination for him, certainly not what was in a bedroom. But as he took in the space, he realized it was so like her, understated but classy. As she squeezed his fingers, his attention focused back on the woman in the room, her smile wrapping around his heart as her eyes captured his gaze. She stepped closer, her lips melding with his once again. He loved the taste, the feel, the sensations that engulfed him whenever they kissed. He allowed her to take charge, and she pulled him tighter. After a moment, his patience unexpectedly snapped, and he angled his head for maximum contact, plunging his tongue inside her mouth, the slow kiss flaming hot. His hand, which had been cupping the back of her head, slid down her arm to the bottom of her shirt. He tangled his fingers in the material and lifted slowly, peeling it upward. When it snagged on the underside of her breasts, she lifted her hands above her head, allowing him to remove it completely before tossing it to the floor. The pale, soft skin of her breasts spilled over the top of her satin bra, and he sucked in a quick breath before trailing kisses from her mouth down toward the beckoning flesh. Leah's skin felt alive as each touch of Aiden's lips tingled across her nerves, beating her nipples into tight points. As his face disappeared into her cleavage, she reached behind and unfastened her bra. He lifted his head slightly, and with a quick shimmy, the satin dropped away from her. Instantly, he bent to take one nipple into his mouth, sucking deeply. The jolt sent shockwaves throughout her, and she dropped her head back, arching her body into his. She clutched his waist before grabbing the material of his shirt and sliding it upward. As soon as his abs were exposed, her fingers began to explore the dips and ridges of his hard muscles. She loved that his muscles were honed from a combination of lifting boxes at the pub and the sports he enjoyed, while he maintained a slight softness around his waist, belying he liked to eat and drink as well.
"A real man."
He lifted his head from her breasts and, reaching behind him, grabbed his shirt. Jerking it over his head, he threw it, and it landed on the floor next to hers. For a moment, the two of them stared at each other, naked from the waist up, their bodies so different, and yet, as they moved together, so perfectly aligned. The feel of her soft flesh pressing into him had his cock straining even harder, but he wanted to do everything he could to make it perfect for her. He found the side zipper to her skirt and lowered it slowly, sliding the clothing over her ass and down to the floor. She held onto his forearms as she stepped out, kicking the skirt to the side. As his gaze dropped lower, he stared in awe. Her full breasts, with rosy-tipped nipples, beckoned, but the sight of her satin panties and lace-topped thigh-high stockings dropped him to his knees. He grasped her ass cheeks as he buried his face against the soft skin just below her belly button. Kissing his way downward, he breathed in the scent of her arousal. Moving lower, his lips met satin, and he could feel her heat. Grasping her panties, he slid them down her legs, and she clutched his shoulders to steady her body. When Aiden's lips latched onto her wet folds, Leah gasped, her fingers digging into his shoulders. Too soon, he pulled back, and she moaned in disappointment, but he just chuckled and stood, shucking his boots, socks, and jeans, managing the feet without stumbling over. Her eyes moved across his muscular chest, but the light trail of hair leading down to his boxers caught and snagged her attention. She wanted to run her tongue over each dip and curve, but from the look in his eye, she knew that would have to wait. He tossed something onto the bed, and she turned to see a strip of condoms now lying on the bedspread. When did he grab those? At the sound of clothing being removed, she eagerly looked back just in time to see him jerking down his boxers. Her eyes landed on his jutting cock, long and thick and wide, the veins standing out. He placed his hands on her shoulders and guided her back until her legs hit the bed. With another nudge, she fell backward, her legs dangling off the side while she balanced her weight on her elbows. He dropped to the floor and disappeared between her thighs. As his lips latched over her heat, she flopped backward on the bed, unable to maintain a coherent thought. Aiden feasted on Leah's wet folds, sliding his tongue deep inside her sex. He loved the scent of her, the taste of her, the feel of her. He felt her hips jerking upward, and he grinned. He lifted one hand from her thigh and pressed it flat against her abdomen, holding her in place. He continued to lick, suckle, nip, and plunge his tongue before moving up, latching onto her clit. She stifled a groan, but he was not having that. Lifting his head, he grinned.
"You feel it? You let it all out, babe."
Nodding, he continued, and she cried out, her fingers digging into his scalp as her orgasm rushed over her. He lapped her juices as the trembling in her body slowed. Kissing his way from her core, over her belly, to her breasts, he latched his lips around her nipple for a moment. Then, crawling over her body, he leaned his head down, kissing her lips so she could taste herself on his mouth. With the scent of sex lingering in the air, he lowered his hips between her legs after rolling on a condom. Ready, he stared down at her hooded eyes and hesitated. Her arms lifted from the mattress and up to his shoulders, where she gave a little tug.
"I want you."
Her words washed over him, and he marveled that such a perfect woman wanted him, that she trusted her care to him. Her complexion glowed in the moonlight, and her long hair spread across the bed.
"Please."
That one word undid him, and he plunged his straining cock deep inside her, fully seating himself in one thrust. Her hips immediately jerked upward to meet his, and he moved slowly. Dragging his cock deep inside her sex, he felt connected in a way he had never felt before. With her fingers on his shoulders urging him on, he began to thrust with more force. With each plunge, he felt a wild desire to claim her in every way possible. The friction quickly built to a crescendo, and Leah tried to stare at Aiden's face, but the emotions crashing into her were overwhelming. For only an instant, the face of her husband came to mind. He had been handsome, well-built, and in the early days, their sex life had been amazing. She had felt loved and cherished by him, but it was only with time that she came to realize it was because he had an image of the perfect wife and perfect family in his mind. When reality did not meet that image, he was unable to cope. and with that shift in him, he had no longer appealed to her as a man. By not allowing herself to be involved with anyone for years, she had forgotten what this kind of intimacy felt like. Forcing thoughts of Carl out of her mind, she held Aiden's gaze, understanding the difference. He knew all of her, and all of Emily, and wanted them both. A smile moved across her lips, as she realized how much she had grown to care for this man that was giving himself to her. As the friction finally engulfed her, all thoughts fled her mind other than the image of Aiden's face above hers, his body rocking into hers, and the emotions swirling between them. Aiden watched the various emotions play across Leah's face, and for an instant, he was fearful of where her mind had gone. But the look in her eyes when her orgasm hit again told him that she was right there, in this moment, with him. He planted himself deeply and threw his head back, his neck straining as his orgasm rushed from his body, feeling more connected with her than he had ever felt with anyone in his life. Holding his upper body away from her, propped on his elbows, with his hands on either side of her face, he lowered his head for a kiss. Unsure of the words that were tangled in his head, he poured all of his feelings into the kiss. She reciprocated, kissing him in return with the same intensity. After a moment, he leaned away from her and, holding her gaze, said,
"I wish I was better with saying what's in my mind, and I hope this doesn't scare you, but I just have to let you know, you mean the world to me."
She replied by holding him close, allowing him to rest his cheek on her chest, with her arms wrapped tightly around him. He shifted his body to the side, taking his weight off her while leaving his head on her chest, reveling in her. As the air slowly cooled their heated bodies, he listened to her heart beating strongly against his cheek.
"God, I love the sound of your heartbeat in my ear."
Well, sated, they both began to drift to sleep, wrapped in each other's arms, and just as sleep claimed him, he heard her whisper,
"That's the sound of my love."
Chapter 21. Sunlight peeked through the slatted blinds, casting the room in a warm glow. Leah blinked open her eyes, and for a few seconds wondered how she had slept so late. Then the feel of heat all along her back hit her at the same time she felt the heavy weight of an arm wrapped around her, holding her tight. She smiled and snuggled deeper into the warmth, loving having Aiden wake up with her in her bed. Having woken up alone for so many years, she noticed everything. The weight of his body on the mattress next to her, his breath warm against her cheek, his muscular arm banded around her, his hand resting at her breast. For a moment, she closed her eyes, and all the cares of the world slipped away, and she reveled in the feel of this man's body holding her next to him. With his breath tickling her cheek, he said in a sleepy voice,
"I don't really want to move away from here, but when is Emily expected home?"
She smiled at his concern for her daughter and said,
"Her friend's mom said that she would bring her home about 10 o'clock.
He lifted his head to look at the clock on her nightstand, then nuzzled her neck.
"Then we've got time."
"Time for what?" she asked, hoping she knew the answer. He pressed his hips forward, and she felt his morning wood nuzzling against her ass. Grinning that he wanted the same thing she did, she said,
"Oh yeah, we've got time for that."
His heat left her for just a second, and she heard the crackle of a condom wrapper. He rolled it on quickly and came back to her, lifting her legs slightly. She arched her back, angling her ass toward him, and he easily slid his cock through her wetness, deep into her sex. With his hand still at her breast, tweaking her nipples, he thrust his hips over and over again until she thought she would break under the onslaught of feelings. He slid his other hand over her hip bone and pressed his fingers against her clit. The breathless pants, as though she had been running, leaving her body, came to an end as her orgasm washed over her. Aiden continued thrusting, Leah's tight heat squeezing his cock. As soon as he felt her body slicken even more, he followed her with his own orgasm, groaning with his release. Lying there, with his cock still deeply embedded in her, their heartbeats slowed. He realized that, for the first time, he had spent the night with a woman, and waking up with someone he cared about was the greatest feeling. He was not itching to leave, did not mind the small talk that would come over coffee, did not mind the idea of a long morning shower with her. Leaning up slightly, he whispered,
"Now that's the way to wake up."
She giggled and shifted around in the bed, her hand coming up to rub over his scruffy jaw. Staring into his eyes, she said,
"I couldn't agree more."
He sighed, adding,
"I hate to leave, but I should be gone by the time Emily comes home. I can take a shower in my own apartment."
She sucked in her lips, and he watched as thoughts moved behind her eyes. Not wanting her to worry, he leaned over and kissed her lightly before climbing out of bed.
"Wait," she called out. "There's no reason for you to leave. That is, unless you want to. Which, if you want, that's fine too. I just don't want you to think that you have to."
He leaned over the bed and stared deeply into her beautiful eyes.
"What are you really saying, sweetheart?"
"I'm saying that I don't want you to go."
"And Emily?
It's not like she's going to see us here in bed together. I don't think she'll think anything untoward if she sees you here when she gets here. I don't know what you have going on this morning, so I know you might have to leave."
"Got nothing I'd rather do, and nowhere I'd rather be,"
he interrupted, kissing her lightly again. Her smile widened until it was beaming. Pulling her gently out of bed, they moved into the shower. Later, finding themselves downstairs in the kitchen, she plated an easy breakfast of scrambled eggs, bacon, toast, and hot coffee. Hearing a noise at the front door, she bolted forward, and he grinned, knowing she missed Emily. He followed behind and watched as she threw open the door and greeted her daughter with a hug. Emily was chattering away as Leah stood and waved toward the driveway as the other mother backed her van out. His eyes snagged on a piece of paper taped to her front door, and, reaching over Emily's head, he grabbed it. Before he had a chance to look at it, Emily immediately began talking to him as well, telling all about her sleepover.
"It sounds like you had such fun," Leah said excitedly. "Have you had breakfast?"
She nodded, but said,
"We just had donuts and juice. I smell eggs. Did you make eggs?"
Laughing, Leah smiled and said,
"Yes. Mr. Aiden was just having some as well. Come on back and we'll have breakfast together."
His heart warmed as Emily grinned up at him, took his hand, and the three of them walked into the kitchen.
"You had a note stuck to your front door this morning," he said, handing the envelope to her.
She glanced down at it and said, probably some kind of request for a donation or a sales advertisement. You can just lay it on the counter and I'll look at it in just a bit." He tossed it down and turned around to face Emily as she continued to tell them about her sleepover. He knew that Leah had been excited for her to spend time with a friend, but also had been a bit concerned. From Emily's excited expression, it appeared that she had had no problem communicating with the other family. Soon, the three of them were at the table, eating breakfast. If Emily wondered why he was there so early in the morning, she did not question or let on that it seemed odd at all. For him, he cast his eye toward the beautiful woman sitting before him and her daughter, marveling that the only feeling he had was one of a full heart. Occasionally, Leah would glance his way and offer a shy smile. As they finished breakfast, she sent Emily off to her room to unpack her overnight bag. As he rinsed the dishes and put them in the dishwasher, she looked down at the envelope on the counter. Picking it up, she pulled out the piece of paper, her eyes glancing over the words. A sharp gasp from her drew his attention, and he watched as she dropped the paper onto the counter, turning wide eyes to him. Unsure of the reason for her reaction, he glanced down at the paper as well. "Searching will yield only trouble, for you and your daughter."
"Fuck,"
he growled, his eyes shooting to her pale face. Moving swiftly toward her, he wrapped one arm around her, pulling her tightly to his side as he jerked his phone from his pocket. He skipped the police phone line, instead calling Mitch directly.
"Got a problem. A threatening note was taped to Leah's door this morning."
After another few words, he disconnected, and, with his lips pressed to the top of her head, he said,
"The police are coming, babe. Don't touch the note again, 'cause they're going to want to take it."
He felt her body shaking and held her close, wanting to ease her fear while at the same time feeling rage coursing through his blood. She leaned her head back sharply and asked,
"What about Emily? You said the police are coming. I don't want her to get scared."
His mind raced, and then he quickly pulled his phone out again.
Mom, please don't ask any questions right now, but Leah and I could really use you. Can you come to her house and watch Emily for a little bit and keep her upstairs while the police are here talking with us?
Disconnecting, he looked back down at her and said,
Mom will come. She's great with kids, and we'll keep Emily occupied upstairs while we're down here.
Slumping against him in relief, his arms tightened as he took her weight.
Oh, Jesus, Aiden, I don't even know what to think.
Don't worry about anything right now. Let's deal with Mitch and see what we need to do.
He loosened his hold on her just enough to bend slightly so that his face was directly in front of hers. Holding her gaze, he said,
You're not alone. Not anymore. Whatever we face together.
Leah quickly learned that the McFarlanes stick together, each jumping in to offer whatever support was needed. Corinne came over and was now ensconced up in Emily's room playing with her dolls. She had called Caitlin as well, who showed up along with Gareth, while Eric stayed at their house to watch little Finn. Ginny had told Brogan when the call came in to Mitch, so the two of them were over also. To her surprise, when Mitch walked in, he was accompanied by Colt. They immediately asked for the note, and she showed them where she had left it on the counter.
Well, your office is in Baytown, and therefore in my jurisdiction. Your house is in North Heron County, and therefore under the Sheriff's Department's jurisdiction, Mitch explained. But don't worry, Colt and I are used to working together.
Colt handled the note with gloved fingers before slipping it into the evidence bag.
We looked into Tad Marvel, Mitch continued. He's out of prison, but he's been in constant contact with his probation officer. In talking with the PO, he reported that Tad's behavior has been model, both in and out of prison.
Nodding, she directed everyone into the living room to discuss the situation. Sure that Emily was unable to hear what was going on downstairs, she and Aiden sat on the sofa while everyone else found seats where they could. She smiled slightly as he wrapped his arm around her shoulders, as though it was the most natural thing in the world, taking comfort from the action. Caitlin sat on the other side of her, facing Mitch and Colt sitting in the two chairs in the room. Gareth and Brogan brought in kitchen chairs for the two of them, as well as Ginny. The small room was full, but as she looked around, it did not feel crowded, but instead felt comforting, filled with people that she knew cared. Leaning forward, Mitch informed her,
The PO also told me that if Tad was involved, he would be very surprised. Now, that doesn't mean that he isn't our suspect, but the note does say searching, which indicates something happening now. I don't want to focus too much on just him.
She nodded again, wordlessly, listening carefully to what he was saying. He glanced to the side toward Gareth, who held her phone out to her.
I checked out everything I could and discovered that the calls that came to you were made from a burner phone, which means I can't trace it. Mitch and I agree it's not typical teenage behavior, and that was before the note was found on your door. Whoever's doing this is someone who wants to unnerve you and not leave a trace.
Her front door opened, and Hunter stepped through, his eyes moving first to her before sliding to Colt. It was the first time she had seen him in his deputy's uniform, and she blinked in surprise.
I've checked with all the neighbors, and no one heard a car or saw anyone approaching Leah's house, he reported. Probably came during the middle of the night when most people were asleep, Colt said.
He turned his attention back to her.
What can you tell us about your work right now?
Still numb from the fact she had actually received a threatening note on her door, she cleared her throat and said,
At the last audit for Baytown, the state accountants found a deficit of over $50,000. The mayor and the town council accepted my proposal for a forensic accounting investigation. All of this is public record, but so far I have seen nothing in the Baytown Gazette about it, which I'm sure they're pleased about. With Mayor Banks running for re-election, he is keen for me to finish my work and find the discrepancy. He's hoping that it can be dealt with quickly. Silas is being quite pushy about wanting me to not talk to anyone and to rush the investigation. It's my understanding that he owes much of his position to the fact that Corwin is the mayor, and the two of them get along very well. I haven't been here long enough to become immersed in small-town politics, and since I don't live inside the town limits, I won't vote in the next mayoral election anyway. I've read in the paper that there's a new resident moved in from a larger city who is also running for mayor. I think Silas is afraid that if news of the investigation gets out, it will look bad for Mayor Banks.
I can't imagine this staying silent very long, Mitch said. The mayor ordered all the town's departments to not speak about it to the press, but, as you say, it's public record.
Colt asked,
"Is there anyone that you're investigating that you would suspect would want you to not do a complete job?"
She snorted, then looked around in embarrassment. "Sorry," she said as she shook her head. "You'll learn to have a thick skin when you're a forensic accounting investigator. You're not exactly welcome when you come into an area to investigate. I have to ask bookkeepers and others for all their records, which immediately makes people intimidated. I then have to start questioning them about some of their practices, sloppy work, things that don't add up, and things that are just, quite frankly, wrong. That also makes people intimidated, and then angry. No one likes to have someone check behind their every step, and certainly not question what they've done." She shrugged and continued, "So I'm treated with a great amount of suspicion, sometimes overt rudeness, and most people are glad to see the back of me." Colt's eyes showed sympathy as he nodded.
"Sounds like police work. They're happy when we do our job and it helps them, but otherwise they wish we wouldn't look into their business."
"Exactly," she said. "I sometimes wonder if I wouldn't be better off just doing what Scott Redding does, which is focus on taxes and business accounting, but..." She threw her